Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the review of all rights protection mechanisms, RPMs, and all GTLDs PDP working group call held on the 30th of November, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll calls. We have participants on the line. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Rebecca Tushnet.
Thank you, Rebecca. Noted. I believe Renee Fossen is also on audio only. So, Renee, I've not noted you as well. Hearing no further names, I'd like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose. And to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to your co-chair, J. Scott Evans. Please begin.
Thank you very much. This is J. Scott Evans for the record. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everyone, depending on where you're located. For those of you that have been on the line for a few minutes, you've probably heard that I said we've only got about 10 members here. On the call, and I hope you all have been watching the list, but there's been a lot of, over the last week, discussion about the fact that they didn't want this call to be a deciding call of anything because there are so many people who are either on planes or couldn't be here, so they had asked that we make sure we have ample time with regards to the call. So, what I suggest we do is if we could get the chart, the table put up that was circulated earlier this week, and if there are any specific comments we have from our Asia-Pacific members who may not always be able to make our calls, if they want to make some comments with regards to the questions here that we could note for the rest of the group, just in case they aren't on another call, I'd like to give you the priority to speak now. The purpose of what we are doing is what we're trying to do is look at the charter questions that were given to us. And for those who know and those who don't, I'll just reiterate the history of where these charter questions came from. Unlike many charters where the GNSO actually has a group that comes up with charter questions and they're very specific, these charter questions were sort of a roundup of questions and concerns that have been raised through various different vehicles. Some were public comments to parts of the process. Some were from a staff report and public comments to a staff report several years ago, and they were just all put in the index as a question. And so, as we have done with both the URS, the TMCH, and the Sunrise period, we've looked at these questions and tried to discern where there were questions that were duplicative. In other words, they were asking the same thing only in a different manner. Where there were questions that were seeking certain information but seemed to be not just seeking information, but seeking an outcome and trying to bring those questions back to a new neutral status where we're seeking just information. And so that's sort of the purpose. And we've done this previously in subgroups. But since we're at a point where we have a subgroup that's working on assimilating questions for the data that we're going to be acquiring for the Sunrise and the Trademark Clearinghouse, and that work is not done, the co-chairs thought it might be more productive work to have the entire working group participate in the process of refining the charter questions with regards to the URS. And so that's where we find ourselves. Last week, for those who were not on the call and have not had a chance, or 2 weeks ago, November 15th, and I listened to that call again today to make sure that I understood, we went through all of the questions, and we really didn't do any refining of the particular questions. We sort of had a refresher of what those questions were, and then we had several issues bubble up where people thought that there were additional issues that should be covered, or there were additional things we should think about, and they were added into the chart in this second column where you'll see it'll tell you where the comments came from, whether it was from the ICANN 60 meeting in Abu Dhabi, or if it was from our November 15th call, and that's what's in the second column. But what we now need to focus on is taking those questions that are verbatim in column one, looking at those questions, and then deciding if those questions need to have adjustments to them in some form or fashion, or if they need to be eliminated because question one, and I'm just using this as an example, in question 14 are seeking the same information, or if they need to be combined, or if they need to be broken out into subparts. And so that's what we're looking for now. And since there are many people on this call who don't make all of our normal calls, and that's the reason we hold this call, I would like to give priority to you all to look at these questions and give us your input. Because so many people are not here, we are in no way going to be able to come to any sort of consensus. So even if this group should say, oh, we believe that question one needs to be written as follows, we'll still have to have a call next week where we have more members on board that we can run and say, here was the conclusion of call on last week, and we open it up to the whole group. So just wanted to sort of set the stage for where we are and what we expect to accomplish this evening. So with that in mind, we have here a table that was created, and I think it was circulated about 30 hours ago from staff. And in the first column, you have the question, the edit that's been presented, and then in the charter, and then you have the next, the comments that we've received sort of around this question, not necessarily with the refinements to this question, but just sort of around the issues concerning this question. And then in the third column, what we have is where this, where staff has identified this question may have come from originally, what the origin of that question is. And what we need to do is then get into another column, our suggested revisions for the questions that we believe will drill down to the information the question is seeking, whether it is seems to rewrite it, you know, for clarity or other reasons. So that's what we're looking for. And with that, we have question one here, and I'll open it to the floor. And I'd like to, of course, again, sort of give precedent to our Asia Pacific members to weigh in. Phil, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, Jay Scott, I just want to make a very quick comment in my co-chair role. I think when we look at this consolidated table and about three dozen questions, I think the concern of members that we're going to rush through this in a week or two is not a serious concern. With that many questions, it's going to, I believe, take us at least through the end of the year to go through all these questions and consolidate them and make them more objective. So, you know, we can make some progress tonight, but I think whatever we do is quite preliminary because there's just so much to get through here. Having said that, we have the time. The co-chairs are going to meet with staff on Friday to discuss a lot of things, including the status of the data surveys for the trademark claims and Sunrise registration questions. But realistically, it's going to take several months to get those out and get the answers back. So we have a good deal of time here to give adequate treatment to the URS. And I'll stop with that. Thanks.
All right. So with regard to that, we see question one here. It's should the ability of the defaulting respondents in the URS cases to file a reply for an extended period, paren, E period, G period, up to 1 year, close paren, after the default notice or even after a default determination is issued, paren, in which each case the complainant could be reviewed anew, the complaint could be reviewed anew, close friend, be changed, question mark. And we had a lot of discussion about this last week, and I think what this is drilling down to is whether currently right now there is a year in which a default respondent, a respondent who did not reply and receives a judgment against them, can seek to have that re-reviewed. And I think the question is that, should that be changed? Is that, I think that's what they're asking. And I personally think this question is quite convoluted. And so I open it up to members from the group to give any thoughts or comments with their thoughts on this question.
J. Scott, it's Claudia.
Christine Durain. Claudia, you're next. I see Christine Durain, and then I'll go to Claudia.
I thank you, and I'll defer to any of our APAC friends who'd like to jump in. I believe I mentioned this last week, but that might have been just in my head. Christine Durain, for the record. This question, I think one of the things that I wanted to go back to a little bit was what was prompting this question. So when we read, should the ability for defaulting respondents to reply to file an extended period, to me that wording seems to imply that someone thinks that that is a benefit, maybe even an unnecessary or an overly or an unbalanced benefit that respondents get. And so I'm trying to maybe track out a little bit about why this is there so that we can devise a good charter question. So perhaps something more neutrally worded could be along the lines of, is the, again, using kind of the language from our other charter questions, is the, you know, the default late response process of URS working? Is it having unintended benefit? Is it having an intended effect? Are there any unintended results? You know, has anyone found evidence of harm from the way it's being done? Is it awkward? Is it unwieldy? I mean, those could be some sort of more generic questions that I hope aren't leaning toward one side or the other. Again, just opening volley on the type of language that we could possibly update this to. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Yeah, I mean, this is J. Scott Evans for the record, and I wonder if perhaps the first question should be, has a respondent ever invoked this to the providers? Because, I mean, it seems to me that if it's never been reused, it's hard to draw a conclusion and ask any additional questions about whether it's fair or unfair if it's never been used. Any response to that? Christine.
Thank you. This is Christine again. Just to reply to your question and not to jump on Claudio. That's one of our data questions, right? So when it comes to that far right column, what data do we need to even get to this question? And I think that's where that goes, and I think that's good. And I think maybe Phil's comment in the chat also maybe sort of goes into that as well. So we need some data to find in order to figure out, is this working or not?
Right. Great. Claudio, I'm sorry. I forgot you.
Oh, no. Not at all. And I completely agree with what you guys have been saying. I was thinking something along the lines of whether that appeal mechanism is serving its intended function and, you know, whether any changes might, you know, be considered. But exactly along the lines of what you and Christine were saying.
Yes. Great. I want to reply to Justin Chu in the list. If you he's put in the chat, how does one suggest editorial changes then if one wished to? You just need to go up to the little hand icon if you're in Adobe Connect and raise your hand and you will be acknowledged and you can give us your input. Or if you feel more comfortable to present it in writing, you can do that in the chat box and we will try to capture it. It's hard for me to watch this, but usually somebody on the call, either staff or myself, will find it and will speak to it and read it into the record. I see that Heather Forrest has raised her hand.
Thanks, J. Scott, very much. And I appreciate you're carrying on with the call for the APAC folks. On question one, I didn't have any comments initially, but on hearing Christine's point, I think it makes me think of something else, which is my concern about question one is that we elicit for change, if any purpose and if any change. It's not really clear to me that that's captured in the question. I mean, we're asking, should it be changed? I think any change in anything that we do, we need to be driven by a purpose. And Christine's data comment exactly picked up on that thought in my mind. So to the extent that we're able to capture that, please, J. Scott, I think that would be helpful. Thanks.
Okay. I'm going to look over here in the notes and see. Okay, they're taking notes. Staff is taking notes into the document. So, as Christine said in that data point comment column, that's where we need to put the data point of how many of these, how many respondents have actually filed to have it reconsidered in that year period. That is a question. How many, if any, have been done? So that we can get that. David McCauley, you're asking the question, are there participants who were present when the URS was formulated with these default challenge procedures deadlines? Was there a reason for it back then? Yes, there are, and I'm going to look to Kathy Kleiman, who I think was part of the STI that worked on some of the changes that happened to it after we originally drafted it, to put these protections in. So, Kathy?
Hi, J. Scott. Good evening, everybody. Good morning, everyone. This is Kathy Kleiman, and thanks. Actually, I think it's a good question, David. I think this may go back to the IRT, J. Scott, which is the issue. I mean, the URS is designed to be an ultra-fast, ultra-quick system for clearly abusive domain name registrations and new GTLDs. But there was certainly a question, would respondents be able to respond in time? Would the notices go into spam? Would they go into the ether? Would they not get them? And hence, would they not be able to respond? So since the domain name is suspended, it can be unsuspended. And so the idea was, and again, I think it came out of the IRT, the idea was to give them a period of time to file a reply if they defaulted initially. And, you know, largely the understanding, the underlying assumption was that they defaulted because they didn't know. So that the suspension itself would wind up being the first notification to them of some kind of proceeding. So another issue, another data gathering point that we would have here is, do respondents even know that they can file during this extended period? Has that education been done? Is that information available easily on the provider websites? That's something I'd be very interested in. Thanks.
Right. So we see here we've got data points that have come up, but does anyone have any suggestions here for rewording this question? I've heard some comments from a couple of people that they think perhaps it needs to be reworded, but I haven't heard any specific suggestions, so maybe that's something we'll leave to our next call. But especially if there's someone from the AsiaPac group that feels like they'd like to get their two cents in on the record, I'd appreciate hearing from you now. Christine Durain.
Thank you, Christine Durain, for the record. Yeah, so let me clarify. I did actually put some suggestion in a moment ago, but I had said a lot of words, so I'm sure it got lost. My suggestion is that we start out with, is the defaulting response period, whatever we want to call that, serving its intended purpose, and we're going to have to ask some questions to figure out what that is, or having any unintended effects. Either of those should be supported by data and evidence. And then from there, we can talk about, you know, if so, how should this default response period be changed to address those issues and or preserve balance? So something along those lines. That's my initial volley for the nomenclature. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Christine.
Yes, Jay Scott. Phil, for the record. You know, my general approach on this question, and frankly all the questions, is that the initial inquiry should be, has this been used? What do we know about the actual use of this or the compliance with this or that point? So I think the initial inquiry should be, how many, if any, defaulting respondents have taken advantage of the ability to file a reply for an extended period. And once we know that data, we can make a better informed choice on whether that period should be changed. I also want to quickly raise a logistical point, which is that, to my knowledge, the great majority of new TLDs to which this policy applies have been registered for a single year. There's very few multi-year registrations and new TLDs, so far as I know. So another question would be, what would happen if a URS was brought midway through that one-year term and the complainant, one, did not exercise their option to extend the registration period for an additional year? And, you know, should there be a limit on this ability if the domain registration period expires and the domain drops back into the general pool? So I'm not sure that was addressed when this was thought of, but it raises an issue about the ability to exercise this, or about at least recognizing that the one-year period may extend longer than the actual registration period of the domain that's been suspended. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. I think that's a point that should be noted. That is not necessarily an unintended consequence that may have occurred, but it is something that is conceptually possible. Heather Forrest.
Thanks, Jay Scott. And I'm just maybe clarifying the point that I just made in the chat. I think Phil and Christina both made excellent points and raised excellent questions. But I think, though, much more broadly, if I look at my notes on later questions in this list, they're around, you know, I have comments and leading phrasing and so on. And I wonder if there are baseline things for everything that we're investigating. Are there baseline questions? And one that I've forgotten that Phil raised, that I forgot to put in my comment there is, you know, have there been unintended consequences? I wonder, are we able to simplify this exercise by, you know, identifying key topics, let's say, rather than lengthily worded questions and saying for each of these things, for example, ability to file a reply, challenge mechanisms, and so on. Are we able to ask, one, has it been used? You know, if not, why not? What was the original purpose? Is this being fulfilled? Have there been unintended consequences? It seems to me that this picks up on the heart of the matter and gives us a bit of consistency in terms of what we're looking at, and does so in a way that avoids, you know, for example, 8 and 12, in my view, are very leading questions. You know, so I wonder if that's a help. Thanks, Jay Scott.
Thank you, Heather. I think that is a very interesting and thoughtful way of going about this. If maybe what we could do is look at the charter questions that they presented and try to identify what is the problem that they're thinking exists or wanting information about to see if it exists, and just identify an objective problem, and then or mechanism within the URS, such as timing or defaults or that kind of stuff, and then ask maybe a template set of questions with regards to those specific issues or mechanisms within the process, you know. So one would be, you know, timing for default judgments. Has it been used? If so, why not? You know, and just we have a list of questions that is applied to each of those issues. I wonder what other people think about something that sort of takes topics and then asks the same questions with regards to the topics. It's a little different approach than we've done with the other charter questions, but I wonder if that doesn't really hammer into, one, driving us to solutions, and two, templatizing questions that are just completely objective. Any thoughts? Okay. Christine Durain says it's not that different. Claudia, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a good idea if we could come up with maybe four or five questions. And I think, Philip was just typing something in the chat about having data, but sort of these high-level questions, have those, and, maybe as we go through these, see if we could agree that those set of questions should apply to a particular topic or a particular question that we come up
okay.
with. And, yep.
Okay. I think that's a good point. So maybe what we should do is, do we think we can go through some of these questions and look at what they're seeking? So question one clearly has to do with a respondent's, has to do with default judgments and the ability to have those reviewed after default has been issued. That seems to be, to me. And let's move down then, if we can move on to question two and see what we're, are you capturing this, staff, something?
Hi, this is Julie Hedlin from staff, yep. Capturing it, but I'm doing it offline in the document itself, if that's okay.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't speaking too fast or moving too
quickly. Oh, perfect. Thank you so much, Shayfat. Sorry not to put my hand up.
That's okay. So then we have a second question. Should the response fee applicable to complainants listing 15 or more disputed domain names by the same registrant be eliminated? So, I mean, again, we could talk about response fees, response fees in the URS, and then ask, have they been used? If so, why not? Those types of questions with regards to that kind of thing. That's how I see this going. Are people comfortable with something like that, where we take the issues, we lay them out, and then we would ask a set of consensus-based questions against each targeted thing so that we can then, do that? So I think our work here would be is to, group these things into areas that are closely related that we can go through. I think, Heather thinks that this will be a much easier way to go to streamline our efforts. I'd love to hear from some of the other folks on the call. Heather.
Thanks, G. Scott. Just to say, I know we're missing most of Europe. So to the extent that, I think it's important that APAC folks make their thoughts on this known here. And then you probably want to take the idea on to the next call, although I would suggest that
absolutely.
Of North America and APAC here, if we get enough momentum on this, we could even start working before the next call, before we get Europe back on, work on a high-level list of questions, which I don't think is going to be very hard. We've really articulated them already. And that way you can present to the bigger group, let's say, when you have the call at that time zone, what this could look like, and that'll give them a bit more to work with. But I would encourage, let's say, speaking as an APAC person, this is the time for us to speak up. I appreciate the opportunity. J. Scott, thanks.
I agree. So why don't we do this? do we think we can come up with a list of proposed 5 high-level questions, templatized, that we could suggest to the other geographic members of this group who are not on this call for consideration? So are there folks on the call that could suggest things that we would put in these templatized questions that we could say, this is our idea? That doesn't mean these would be the exact questions, but it would give us a way to get a better understanding of the concept of what we're speaking about. So I think one question is, we would ask for everything, has the mechanism or provision ever been used? And I'm leaving that would be sort of for staff, mechanism, provision in brackets, because you would insert, you know, whatever your specific is into that, and you would ask that specific question. Then I think the next question is, you know, if so, how many? How often? Are there any identifiable issues that have arisen? If it is not being used, why not? And then I guess the last question would be, are there any changes? And I think Heather put it here, what changes? So Heather has, let me read into what Heather's put here. Oh, Heather, you've raised your hand again. I will allow you to do it.
Thanks, Jay Scott. I'm happy to read them in. And I just wanted to say, I don't mean to throw cold water, and I'm not in any way trying to dominate the discussion. But I'm thinking, Jay Scott, you're going down the road of getting specific on use and saying, if not, why not, and all of that. I think if we could capture high-level data points on each thing and then lead to, if you like, clarifying questions on in relation to each of the overarching questions. So the ones that I have, and I'm by no means wedded to them, but it's what I have in the top of my head based on the interventions of Christine and Phil. One, has it been used? Not going further into the why and why not and all of that of use, but one, has it been used? Two, what was the original purpose and is that purpose being fulfilled? Three, bearing in mind that purpose, have there been any unintended consequences? And I said, four, what changes could better align the mechanism with the original purpose or facilitate it to carry out that purpose? I'll put them forward as a straw man, Jay Scott, to give us something to work with. Thanks.
Kathy?
Yeah, you know, it's hard when we're starting on defenses, I think, because this is, you know, we're trying to come up with kind of global or generic rules, and we're looking at some really detailed issues. And I think, you know, the questions may each require kind of a different examination. One thing I wouldn't do necessarily is take out the details. We're going to find a lot of people in our working group may not know that there's the time to reply is up to a year. They may not know that there's a response fee at 15 domain names. You know, different things. Let's not take out too many of the details that help provide some guideposts to what the actual underlying rules are, since we haven't studied them in great detail. And certainly, I think our 150 members and many observers haven't memorized them. So let's keep some of that. And you know, I worry a little bit about neutralizing the questions too much. People did come to us with questions. Stakeholder groups did submit these. And there are some, and they do reflect some of the worries and concerns about balance, about fairness, about defenses. So I think at some point we have to keep in mind the underlying concerns. I'm not quite sure how we do that, but I think that does have to be reflected. So one of the key issues, again, is, you know, do people know about this? Why hasn't this been used is something. So getting to the why, which I've heard reflected in others. But let's not, lose all the details here. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. I certainly didn't expect us. My personal perspective was that we wouldn't lose any of the details. We would have to set out that currently this is what the policy requires, and then we would ask the necessary questions. Any other comments or concerns? Is there anything for the Asia-Pac folks that have looked through or have any issues, whether in these charter questions or with the URS in general, that they would like to put on the record at this point? Sal? Maybe on mute because I'm not hearing you. I do see that your hand has been raised. Can you all hear me? Zhao, if you can't activate your mic, you can type into the I see you're going to try to type, and then we will read your comment and our question into the record. Justin, if you'd like to go ahead and make your comment while we're waiting on Zhao to type in his, please feel free to do so. Okay, I'm going to call on Peter because his hand is raised. I can't hear Petter either. Can anyone hear Petter? I've turned on my computer as well.
Petter, this is Terry from staff. I do show where you're on the telephone, but your line is muted. Please check your mute.
Hi. Sorry.
Here he is.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Good. Well, what I was trying to say is, personally, I think it's always good to have some kind of question, and I don't have the exact suggestion for it now, but for some to get a reply for those that wanted to use the system but haven't used it, and what kind of changes they would like to see in order to make it efficient for use. I think that's what turned out not to be question 4 or point 4 that was originally something related to those that haven't used it. As said, I don't have a clear suggestion for that, but it's I think we also want to reach out to those that have not used the system to clarify if the reason for that. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Did Zhao ever get his comment into the record? I'm not seeing here. I thought he said he'd try to type. Perhaps he's still typing. Are there any other comments here with regards to the URS, any of these specific issues raised here that folks would like to get on the record? Heather.
I'm so sorry, Jay Scott. I said I wouldn't see you again. Just for clarity, yeah, so Kathy just put in a comment in the chat. about if not, why not? And I, you know, from my perspective, I don't think that's what we should be asking in this high-level set of questions. My last intervention on this day, I think we come up with four questions. Let's not delve into sub-questions of those questions because we're right back to where we started in this exercise, and we're really just repeating the chart. I think we've done a good job in the chart. What the chart has proven that we have now is that it's going to be very difficult to agree on the wording of very detailed questions, and we're looking for specific data points that can then be followed up with data from our data request and followed up with other investigations. So I think to the extent that we move away from high level, you know, just for clarity, I was not suggesting that we go down into subpoints. You know, come up with if everyone's amenable, come up with a high level list of questions. I've read those four that I'm happy to use as a straw man into the record. But just to correct that point of Kathy's, that it wasn't my view that we go into sub details, if you like. Thanks.
Okay, so at this point, I think we've got a draft set of points that Heather has made that we can present to the rest of the group with regard to these and sort of present our idea to the rest of the group. What I'd like to know is if there's any other comments, because if not, I think we can give everyone about 45 minutes of their time back this evening, this morning, or this afternoon, and we can present this more detailed thought process, because I think a lot of the angst and concern about having a call where there were a lot of people who feel like they've got a lot of comments goes to Heather's point of trying to get to consensus on very detailed, in-the-weeds, sub-questions, and those kinds of things. With regards to Kathy's concerns, I think that we can set out to the group, here is what the policy states. So if they're unaware of what the policy states and how it works, there it is. Here are the questions we're going to ask with regards to that. And then we can do that with each one. I mean, I think we can set this up and educate the group as to what mechanisms and our concerns we're talking about, and then still ask a high-level objective questions to it. That's my personal view. Maxine says, J. Scott, I think there are not many of us, and the responses need to collect it via the poll. Okay, would you like me to take a – asking Maxim, you wanted me to take a poll on whether the templatized idea of asking these objective high-level questions should be brought to the next group and whether this group agrees with that? Is that what you're wanting me to poll, Maxim? And then while you're answering that – okay, yes, all right. But before we go there, I will do that then. Mary?
Thanks, J. Scott. So from the staff side, we just wanted to ask a clarifying question in relation to what you summarized as next steps, in relation also to the specific questions that Heather suggested. So what we're taking as an action item for staff is that we should apply or, as appropriate, tweak the questions Heather suggested in relation to each topic that has been raised in the charter questions. And, you know, those are the questions in the leftmost column. But our question to you and the group is, the questions that we have right now don't necessarily address all the different elements and components of the URS. And you had said that what we probably want to do is to say, you know, here's the policy and here are the specific questions. So are we talking about just the topics that are highlighted in these questions as we have it, or should we broaden that and go to every element of the policy and apply the questions that Heather has suggested? Thank you.
This is J. Scott. My thought was we would tease out from the questions that the community has raised issues with in forms of various questions at the various fora, what
the mechanism and or issue is from these questions, come down to a list of topics, and then with regards to those topics, we would apply a high-level set of questions to each topic. That was my thought. Not going through every point of the policy. And I think Mary says she's got it. Okay, so Maxim has requested that I take a poll of those on the call that to see how many people feel that it would be appropriate that we present to the larger working group this concept that we've just been discussing, and that is that we would, just as I said, tease out from the charter questions that are presented here the issues that we're trying to resolve or we're trying to explore, and then ask a high-level set of questions with regards to each of those. And a lot of those questions would be templatized, meaning we'd be asking the same set of questions, which are more data point questions with regards to every one. So with that, for those who are used to Adobe Connect, the way we take a poll is if you go up to the little man with his hand raised, there is a drop-down menu, and you can hit a arrow or an X, and that will let me know where we are. I saw Claudio said, yes, George's hand is up. So I'm going to defer to him, and during this time, if people respond to the poll. George? Okay, he's turned. Okay, people are turning into hands. If you would leave your... And so everyone is understanding, I am in no way suggesting that this is what we will do. I'm only suggesting that we take that as a summation of this call and we present it on forward to the group. It may be rejected, it may change, but that is what I'm doing. Rebecca, I think you may be the only person that's still on audio, so I'd be happy to hear from you if you'd like to give us a verbal response. Oh, she's in the Adobe, I see now. Okay. So if you could let us know, Rebecca, you can vote like everyone. It looks like we've got a critical mass of folks who believe we should present this forward. I see Kathy's hand has come up.
Yeah, Kathy Kleiman. And I have a question related to order. And so it's not directly relevant to the poll that you're taking, but it is. I think, again, starting with the fences is kind of starting at the end rather than the beginning. Normally when you analyze a set of regulatory rules or judicial procedures, you start with things like notice. So we've got questions about notice. We've got questions about language. Then you look at the causes of action. Then you look at the defenses. Then you look at results and questions that you have about that. So I think a lot of this would be much clearer for many people in the working group if we went it through a traditional order, again, not starting at the end, starting at the beginning. And then we'll have a much better idea also whether this kind of grouping of questions will work. But, it's a good idea to work through. But, again, I think reordering it will help everyone think about it much more easily. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I would ask that on the next call you make that point, and during the interim, if you'd like to articulate that some way in writing to the list, that would be very helpful. Christine Durain?
Thank you. This is Christine, and I'm wondering a little bit here. I know maybe I'm circling back, and I don't want to reinvent the wheel, but We've gone back and forth a little bit about whether or not this is a sub-team or whether this is the full working group. And
I just know that there's many of us on this call today that have sort of been on these sub-teams, and this sort of like batching the questions and organizing them and asking the questions is kind of a thing that we sort of figured out. And I know that this is a small group of people on this call, and I'm wondering if, I know we talked about people maybe not showing up if they weren't interested in talking about URS, sort of effectively making this plenary working group a de facto sub-team. So I'm just wondering where that line is on bringing things back. I voted to bring it back to the large group, but I'm a little bit wondering if it's going to matter. I mean, this list might be the list of people who care. I know having the Asia-Pacific call might have changed things, but just want to throw that out there, that bringing things back to the larger sub-team is generally, you know, if we have sort of this track happening here, it might just sort of end up delaying or slowing things down if the rest of the sub-team is sort of assuming that, or the rest of the working group is assuming that a quote-unquote sub-team is going to handle it. Just thought I'd throw that out there as a consideration for if we do present it to the full group. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Christine. The reason I keep saying this is we had three or four members this week who've raised issues of concern about not being on this call today. So there are people who passionately care who are not here tonight. And so it will at least be brought up for the next call. And anything we end up doing, the final proposal would have to be consensus to the entire working group. It doesn't, you know, we're not going to keep bringing it back to get rehashed, but we'd have to come to some sort of consensus with some sort of group. So that's where we are. Mary had a specific point she wanted to make with regards to an earlier point Kathy made. So I'm going to call on Mary first, and then I'm going to go back to Phil.
Thanks very much, Jay Scott, and thanks, Kathy, for your observation. So I just wanted to observe here that the categories that you see in this table are the same as the categories with which we organize all the charter questions and entered them at ICANN60 in Abu Dhabi. So, you know, we would, as staff, welcome suggestions as to either reordering or whether we put certain specific questions in the wrong category. We did try our best to be as chronological as possible, but, for example, the reason why the first category is response is that we did not identify any questions specifically that had to do with, say, filing the complaint. So if it does seem a little choppy, it is because we did try to categorize the questions first based on generally the chronology of how a complaint would proceed through the system, but secondly also based on the questions themselves. So where there wasn't to us a specific question on one particular stage in the process, we did not create a category for that process. So hopefully this is helpful as you look at the order, as Kathy suggests. Thanks, Jay Scott.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, Phil?
Thanks, Jay Scott. Phil, for the record. And what I want to say here is I agree we shouldn't be, while we want to be evaluating the issues raised by the community and that may be raised by working group members, we're not here to rehash the decisions made back when the URS was created. The advantage we have is that when these rules for the URS were created, it was based on policy, not speculation, but policy decisions made in a vacuum without any experience. What we have is the benefit of experience. And so for all of these questions, as much as possible, we should be base whatever answers to the questions on data, identify the data. And there are different types of questions here. We went through a few which had questions, and we said, well, before we can answer that question, we have to know whether that aspect of the URS has been used, and that's data we need. Then we have a question like question four, which basically is a question asking for data. Are the expanded defenses of the URS being used, and if so, how, when, and by whom? Well, that's a question asking for data, but we need to create a follow-up question if that's going to go forward and say, well, once we've had that data, what's the question or what's the what's the decision to be based on it. And then we have a question like question six about should there be additional remedies such as a perpetual block. I think the predicate to that question is probably at least is there anecdotal data that the availability of only suspension as a remedy has discouraged the use of the URS for black and white cases. And so in all of these, we want to say, what's the facts, you know, and then what's the answer we should be, what's the question based on those facts that we want to answer. I'll stop there, but I think it's been a useful discussion, and that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else who has any further comments they'd like to make? Okay. If not, it's my hope that staff can, within the next 48 hours or so, if not faster, sort of get a summary of this conversation out to the wider group so that they will have time to think about it. We had a few complaints about the turnaround time, and it was not staff's fault. It's just the timing is what the timing is. But if we could try to get a summary of tonight's call out to the wider group and have a discussion about some of the issues we've raised on the list, that would be extremely valuable. And then thank you, Heather. Heather says, I'm happy to follow up with refining what is sent to the wider group. If that's helpful, that would be very helpful. So if we'll get that out to the list so that we can have some robust discussion about some of the ideas that have been discussed tonight, I think that would be very helpful. I think I am very much personally in favor of trying to identify templatized questions that will sort of coalesce around where the charter questions are trying to get that are data-driven. So, you know, I think Jeff Newman and Phil have both raised over this, the 15th call and the call today, the purpose here is not to renegotiate issues that were a matter of rough compromise some 5 or 6 years ago. The issue is to identify if there's data-driven, identifiable problems, and if so, how do we fix them? And that's what we need to be focused on. So with that, I'm going to call us to a close 30 minutes early because there has been, you know, I think everybody I've asked two or three times if we've had additional comments, and there haven't been any. But I would encourage those of you that are in the Asia Pacific to go through this chart. And if you have comments or concerns with regard to this chart that you'd like to bring to the greater list, please do, because we will be teasing from this list those issues that we're going to consider, even if we do this templatized data-driven approach more objective. So if you have any issues, concerns, or thoughts with regards to anything that's raised in this table, this is the time to bring it up. And we'll be discussing it next week, so you've got an entire week in order to sort of consider it and coalesce your thoughts and get it down to us and on the record. That would be very helpful. So with that, I would say thank you very much for everyone's participation this evening, this morning, this afternoon, depending on where you're located. And I will now turn it to staff to tell us when our next call is and to conclude the call.
Hi, Jay Scott. It's Terry from staff, and I do show the next call will be scheduled for Wednesday, December 6th at 1800 UTC for 90 minutes. I'll put it in chat as well.
Thank you so very much. Good night, everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening.
And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. And Operator G, if you could stop all recordings. Everyone have a wonderful rest of your day.